Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Tom, are you ready to correct our terrible Pack Your Knives Top Chef draft history?
I am so ready to be just so bad at this. I don't know what's going to happen.
This is Pack Your Knives. I'm Kevin Arnovitz.
And I'm Tom Haberstroh.
Tom, it's time for the Season 18 draft. Last week, we previewed the contestants, sight unseen, and now we've gotten a glimpse of them in action, first in a quickfire team composition, then in the elimination challenge. A lot to glean. What's important? What's not? What's circumstantial? What's not? And I don't want to take any more time. I mean, I just think we should go right into the draft. I have a trade proposal before we start, though.
Big noise and things, fireworks, explosions. Wow, we've got a trade proposal. Let's hear it.
Tom, I will trade you the second pick, the third pick, and the sixth pick for the first pick, the fourth pick, and the ninth pick.
Okay. Well, let's back up here. So the draft order right now is me. I get the first pick because I won last season's draft. I'm 3-0 in the fantasy scoring, by the way. Last year I won, so I get the first pick. Then you have 2-3. Then I have 4-5. You have 6-7, et cetera, et cetera. You are offering me, in exchange for the number one pick, all right, let's write
I'm
this
basically,
down.
Here's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You've got 1-4, I've got 2-3. We switch that, and in exchange for switching that, you get my 6, for your nine.
Okay, that's not a bad trade. So I would be getting 4, 5. No, I would be getting 2, 3, 6.
No, you still have your 5. You'd have 2, 3, 5, and 6, Tom.
I'm going to accept that trade.
We have a trade.
The new trade.
We have a trade.
The new draft. I'm very nervous about this. The new draft order is Kevin gets the first pick. I get the second and third. All right. I'm writing this down. You get the fourth. I get the fifth, sixth. You get the seventh. I get the eighth.
You get 5, 6, and 7, don't you?
No, because you originally had 7. Did you trade me 7?
Oh, that's right. No, I'm not trading 7. Right. Okay. But the point is you now have 4 of the first 6 picks.
I do. I'm very excited about this.
All right.
I have 4 of the first 6 picks, and you get your first swing at this. This is the first time I believe you've ever drafted first, and I want to hear kind of your thinking here and why you propose this trade. I'm happy to make the trade, Kevin.
I have found my Luka. I feel like there is a contestant here that is...
You're Luka Doncic.
I don't want to say leaps and bounds, but I think the probabilities, based on technique, based on what I saw in the early going, I think there is a contestant that is in a field of 15, as big a favorite as you can be.
Wow. I think I know who it is, but I think that's a bold statement after one episode. This isn't an all-star season, Kevin. This isn't like we've seen them before. We've seen one episode, but you have seen so much in that episode, in that tape. And I guess the bio, the background, the technique to say this is the biggest favorite of our PYK draft history.
Yeah, and by the way, and I'll give you some other logic after I name the pick of why I do the trade. With the first pick in the season 18 Pack Your Knives draft, Kevin selects Shota Nakajima from Seattle, Washington.
Wow, so that is who I had number one on my big board.
I figured that as well. I just think, and by the way, I am now determined, as I wrote the good PR folks at Bravo, I need a tutorial on the soy braise method, because I do duck breast here on a weekly basis and I have nailed it. But, you know, I do it with a little plum compote. I don't really screw around with method. I'm sort of going 101 and it's great. But I need to learn this. I think the pumpkin white miso puree, Tom, those looked like Top Chef finale plates. What he did, you know, he had kelp as his essential ingredient. I just think there is skill, there is poise. He was cool as a cucumber, and that's why I had him number one. And I will tell you the other rationale. So we're basically trading 1, 4, 2, 3. You could argue in terms of value, those are about even. I think when we get down to 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, I don't think it matters a damn bit. And so if you want my 6, I'll take your 9. We are so incompetent, Tom, that I truly believe that we have randomized the middle of the draft. And so that was sort of my thing. I want Shota. I want to root for Shota. That's my kind of food. I just think there's a really gifted chef here who could just be he could put together one of the great seasons in Top Chef history.
Wow. Wow. That's bold. I mean, I had him number one on my big board, and for all the reasons you listed, I will say that last year, I drafted Gregory Gourdet, number one on the last year's draft, and he performed extraordinarily well for me. I would say we're not totally incompetent because last year, and by the way, we're going to have Gregory on the show later today.
We will have Gregory on the show momentarily, not momentarily, like hourly-tarily.
I'm so excited to talk to Gregory. So Chef Gregory, he was a phenom. He won, I think, like 4 episodes before he got injured. And this is kind of, you know, this happens in the NBA. Is a team is steamrolling through the playoffs. Steph Curry tears his MCL. And then all shit hits the fan. And Gregory didn't win last season, but he was on that trajectory. Melissa King, totally a deserving winner last year. But keep in mind, Kevin, this is, might have gone into your thinking here. In our draft, here is where the eventual Top Chef winner was drafted. Last year, Melissa King was the 8th pick in the draft. The year before that, Kelsey was the 10th pick in the draft. The year before that, Joe Flam was eliminated, came back to Last Chance Kitchen, went back into the competition, and won it all. Joe Flam won the competition as the 6th pick in our draft. So 6 through 10 over the last 3 years has been that sweet spot, and that's what you're trading into, you're saying.
That is what I'm trading into. So, Tom, you now have 2 and 3.
Okay. And I also have 5 and 6, by the way. Yeah, that's right. That's right. I'm feeling right. Pretty stocked right here. All right. Chef 2 and 3. Okay. I'm going to go with Chef Gabe Irales. Gabe got a lot of showtime in this show, a lot. In fact, in the very beginning, he got some showtime and also backed it up. They loved his dishes. I think he was very well composed. He just seems like a chef that really understands his cooking and very confident in his cooking, unlike Sarah, who won the whole thing without having the confidence of feeling like she had the winning dish. So I'm going with Gabe Irales for my number 2 pick. How do you feel about that?
He was second on my board as well. There's a lot to like there. I just, you know, it's funny. I don't know if we're falling into the duck trap. Duck is so much easier than any of those other proteins, right? Like, it's not a coincidence that no one with turkey got anywhere near, you know, the top 4. You know, chucker's sort of an unknown quantity. You know, squab is temperamental. I don't know, but I just saw what I saw with the glaze and the figs and the pasilla mihe. Like, there's a lot of composition there. I'm with you. He was second on my board.
Okay, number 3 on my list.
Oh my gosh, am I really gonna do this? I'm
swaying here. I don't know exactly what I'm gonna go here.
Oh, you have your board, man. You're Tom Haverstraw. You got your board.
I'm going to go with number 3 pick. Team Haverstraw selects Don Burrell.
Interesting. I think that's a good pick. Tell me why, though.
I think her Olympic history. I'm going to go with the – maybe I'm a sport biased here. But I really do believe that her Olympic history is going to help her in this competition. It did not show in episode 1. She left her element on the sauce off the plate, and that really hurt her at the end at the judges' table. However, I do think that there was enough promise in this episode. Plus, I think that moment with Jamie, when Jamie was putting the sauce on the skin side up, she lost her shit, and she also looked at the camera, broke down the fourth wall. I don't think we've ever had this, Kevin, and I loved this moment, is when Jamie messed up that dish and put the sauce on the skin side up. She looks at the camera. Did you notice that?
We're officially in postmodern Top Chef.
I don't think we've ever had this moment where they break down the fourth wall, the office style, and she looks at the camera like, are you effing serious right now? I thought that was a glorious moment. She has a command of the room. She knows the Top Chef game. She owned her mistakes at the end. And also, even though she didn't have her sauce on that dish, the final plating, she owned it up and she said, I'm going to nail these other ingredients. And the judges love the other ingredients. So I know she kind of tripped. Not to use a track and field analogy here. She tripped out of the starting gate with that dish, not completing the plating there on time. But I really believe in Dawn and her ability to cook. I just think you have to have a certain disposition and competitive fire to be an Olympian and one of the best chefs in the world. And I just love Dawn Burrell's profile.
Yeah, I do too, for many of the same reasons, right? Like, she's competitive and you have to be really competitive. The fact that naked turkey was good enough for the judges to keep her off the bottom again, I think turkey is garbage. I don't know why we cook with it. When's the last time anyone went to a decent restaurant, fine dining experience, or even non-fine dining experience, and seen turkey on the menu? There's a reason for that. We celebrate it in this country because a bunch of people in funny hats – It was the only wild thing running around, and they were going to starve. And so they ate turkey. And that's the only reason this thing has such a prominent place. When you go over to the great culinary capitals, no one has turkey anywhere. But yeah, I'm with you. A rice fritter, that's tough to do naked on a plate. Yep. She did that, the turkey. And I think in some ways, hey, if she has time management issues, she's certainly got the alarm. And so I think it's a really strong pick. I applaud it.
Now, I gotta stop here, Kevin, and remind people we do this draft every year. We might be doing some trades. We've done some trades before mid-season. I'm not ready to go for another trade here at the draft night, but I will say I am surprised by the fact that there is still the first elimination challenge winner on the board at pick number 4. This has not happened in Top Chef, Pack Your Knives draft history. The number one, the winner of the first elimination challenge has always gone number one. Last year was Gregory Gaudet. The year before that was Natalie, and the year before that was Tyler Anderson. Tyler Anderson was kicked off 2 episodes later, I believe, and Natalie was kicked off the previous episode, the next episode. So I kind of feel like, Kevin, maybe we're learning a little bit more, is that the first elimination challenge is not the best predictor, even though six of the 17 Top Chef first elimination challenge winners went on to win the whole thing. 35% of the first elimination challenge winners went on to win the whole thing. Just to put that in perspective, that's such a high rate. Just to put that in perspective, Kevin, look at
accordingly with the fourth pick.
With the fourth pick, Kevin Arnovitz selects.
I select Sarah Hellman.
Yes.
I that stat was not lost on me either. And the other thing is, look, I'm with you in the sense that you always are a little skeptical of the self-deprecating, doesn't have any confidence, can't accept a compliment chef. But I also think there's also a history of aw shucksing your way to the finale. And I think Sarah's going to aw shucks her way to the finale. You can't look, Tom, at that plate with those components. The grilled quail, the green beans, the charred dates, and the eggplant coconut yogurt. That is a grown-ass plate of food. Grilled quail, not the easiest thing in the world. I mean, I like the fact that she came in with anchovies. This is someone who knows how to cook. She seems unflappable. I think to a certain extent, being on the other end of the spectrum from Dawn, in terms of just fire in the kitchen, like I think that like you can use that to your advantage as well.
Kevin,
I love Dawn as a contestant. I love Sarah for different reasons, but I just think, it's one other thing. Can I imagine her like turning out a clunker on any given show? It's very hard to imagine what I've seen thus far that she turned out a clunker. She's on the top. I'm in both competitions. I think sometimes Occam razor should govern us, and it's going to govern me here.
I don't hate the pick. I was debating between Dawn and Sarah there. So me, when I was waffling between 2 picks, it was Sarah. And I'm looking at the stats here, Kevin. The analytics show that the winning the first elimination challenge of the first like 6 challenges is the most important or the best predictor in Top Chef history of winning the whole damn thing. 6 out of the 17 winners on the first day end up winning the whole damn thing. And 7, if you count Nina Compton over Nicholas Helmy in that season, Nina Compton won the first elimination challenge and went to the finals. 10 out of the 17, Kevin, 10 out of the 17 first elimination challenge winners went to the final. So Sarah Hellman is a fantastic pick. Also, I do love the whole, the fact that she is working at a vineyard, I feel like that's going to come into play later on in the competition when they start using a lot of the hometown. She's the head chef of Soder Vineyards, the hometown favorite. I do think, though, that there is a little bit of a lower floor here with Sarah because of the fact that she was so not confident. And I love the fact that Tom Colicchio at the finals, the judges table, saying, whoever made this dish was an extremely confident chef. And then it turns out it was the complete opposite. And what I worry about with Sarah is that she's going to get inside her own head. And I think it's going to kind of mind fuck her here a little bit, is just, I won, but I wasn't confident with it. Should I go with my first gut? Should I switch it up? But man, that coconut coconut explosion. I'm already regretting not going with Sarah at number three. That dish was so inventive, and even though she wasn't totally sure about it, that was a super impressive dish. Fifth pick, the number five pick in the Pack Your Knives, number four draft, season 18. I'm going to go with Gabrielle Pascuzzi. Gabrielle is someone that kind of irked me, rubbed me the wrong way. A little irked how often he mentioned that he had worked with Tom Colicchio, right? Kind of like every chance he get, he was like, oh, by the way, you remember you and me back in the day, Tom? I remember when I was your chef? And I was kind of annoyed by that, but I also think he's super strong in this competition.
Yeah, I agree with you. I figured that's who we were going to go for. Was hoping he dropped to seven, but not going to happen. And I think, as I thought Tom articulated it really well, I think there's something to be said for having the confidence just to put a couple of components on a dish, you know, a subtle honey plum sauce, roasted squab. Like it was a grown-ass plate of food. And by the way, I still love the sandwich menu at his joint in Portland. But yeah, this is a really strong pick. And again, I was hoping that maybe he would drop, but pretty much knew that you would take him here.
Yeah. Did you know that he worked for Tom Colicchio, Kevin? I don't know if you knew after the end of that episode, you figured it out. But yes, Gabriel, I'm going with Gabriel with my fifth pick. Sixth pick. I get the sixth pick here.
Yes, you do.
I'm going with Nelson Herman.
Okay.
Nelson Herman knows his cooking, Dominican inspired. He made a dish that the judges said it feels like my mom's cooking. This is something where I just feel like he knows who he is. He's got an incredible background. I feel like he is steady in the kitchen. I didn't see any sort of stress in there. And I kind of felt like Nelson Herman, at the end of the day, is going to be a really good workhorse in the kitchen. I really like Nelson Herman's his profile here.
With the seventh pick, I select.
Hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, little, hey, boy, how you doing? And Noodle's just like, ah, whatever.
Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with the plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for your eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance. Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher-turned-podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep. Free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise. But maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order.
Chris Vaud from Milford, New Hampshire. So, Tom, I think it was sort of an unfortunate episode for him. I mean, first is he comes in with butter. Totally reasonable thing to have that you can't live without in the kitchen. By the way, I do want to talk about the what could you not live without in the kitchen for a second. But look, and we'll do that after this pick. I felt like, again, he was dealt a bad hand in both portions of the show.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know, they're working with kelp and rice vinegar. It's sort of this Japanese profile. And then it's like butter. It kind of gets lost. Because just simply put, I mean, there's this – I can't think of anything less of a match in a kitchen than kelp and butter. But he then gets the turkey breast. Oy, turkey. What are you going to do with turkey? Oh, I know. You're going to sous vide it. Like the fact that he had the instinct to know that this dry-ass meat – I mean, turkey breast is, again, garbage meat. He has the good sense to sort of lock in the moisture, the rum-braised turkey thigh – the farro, the corn puree. Like, I just think that was like the guy knows fine dining. He's got great instincts. The first episode didn't really provide him the circumstances to show it. But again, this is not a guy I see making a lot of unforced errors. So at 7, can he last 7 weeks? Yeah, I don't think, given his training, his instincts, that I'm not worried about this guy getting bounced in the next month, Tom. So that's why I go with him number 7.
The ingredient that you can't live without or that you must have.
Yes.
What did you think? Those choices.
You know, it was interesting because you had two different approaches by the chefs. Some chefs chose staples, right? Like butter, Meyer lemon, just things that you need to have within arm's reach. You can't cook without it. Some people went with like a signature item, right? Like the smoked trout roe for Dawn. I mean, I would stretch to say that that's not something you're going to use in every single dish, but it's clearly something she enjoys as an accent to distinguish some of her finer dishes. And so it was interesting. I would have chosen shallots. And, you know, it's funny. It's kind of something I learned in Kitchen Confidential with the late Anthony Bourdain, his book, where one of the secrets to like good restaurant cooking is lots of butter, lots of shallots. And I find shallots have just been really nice. Anything I cook, if it calls for onions, sometimes I do shallots instead. If I'm making a sauce, like shallots to me just add so much to any particular meal.
Yeah, it was interesting. Some of the choices, Gruyere, Brittany went with Gruyere. Maria went with Mexican chocolate. Gabriel went with call fat. Like that one was hilarious just watching them go through it. And Gabriel was kind of – you know, sometimes you need to be a little bit of a dick, and on, you know, in that grouping, he clearly emerged as the alpha in there, and it probably turned some people the wrong way. Notably, Maria was like, "What? Are you kidding me?" But you know, that was a really difficult combination of ingredients there. I really love lemons, like the Meyer lemons pick. I just love anytime you add the citrus of a lemon, it brightens up just about any dish. I love that choice. Hot peppers, oof, that one, like the Scotch bonnet, Kiki choosing the Scotch bonnet peppers. I love a good hot pepper, but I kind of feel like that is something that's going to be overpowering just about any dish. It's going to be so spicy. Interesting selection by her. I really liked Mom's chutney. Avishar choosing that as his ingredient. Byron with the mushroom powder and Nelson with the plantains. Plantains, again, like Nelson knows what he wants to do, and that's why I picked him. So with the eighth pick, right? I have the eighth pick,
right,
correct?
You got eight.
All right, eighth pick. I'm going to go with Kiki.
Kiki Luya, she was, you know, rated one of the black chefs that are changing America by the New York Times. Didn't have the strongest outing in this, but in this episode. But I think in terms of her background and her ability to cook, I mean, she didn't get held with the hand of the best hand there. She got the quail peanut flavor profile. The judges didn't love it, but I like Kiki enough in this competition to give me value at number 8.
Okay. Now, I believe I have the next 3 picks.
You do. Yep. Do you feel confident like in the order of your next 3, or are you just, you know?
I mean, I think this next pick I have sort of higher, and with the 9th pick, I will go with Maria Mazon from Tucson, Arizona. I think there's a lot of strength there. You and I think both have, like, do you get a lot of screen time? Should we expect you to be hanging around a little bit? There was a lot of screen time. She's done some really cool things in her restaurant. It is renowned. She, as you like to say, she knows who she is as a chef. I think everyone liked the enchilada, potosinas, and they were just super spicy. I could not have probably gotten that down. It was a strange grouping in the initial quick fire challenge. So again, I don't know how much I should vest in that particular realm, but I think she's got some distance here, and I don't think she's going away anytime soon.
I mean, I like this pick. I also feel like sometimes I think she mentioned it is just people think, oh, tacos, right? She goes with the Mexican chocolate, which is an interesting choice because, I mean, you do want to bring some of your story, your culture into that ingredient. But I also feel like that's not the most versatile of ingredients. So part of me is thinking maybe Maria understands the Top Chef game not as well as some of the others. I didn't love that choice for the ingredient. But who's your number 10?
And this is another chef that I have higher than 10 on my board, and that's Brittany Anderson.
I can't believe she fell this far. Yeah.
And look, I never want to be too much of a credentialist, but, you know, we're talking about the 2 beard nominations. At the end of the day, she gets this weird bird, the chucker. There was an error, which was, as Padma said, sweet on sweet. Like, you've got the sweet potato puree. You might want to go with something a little more acidic, even potentially bitter. But she goes with the red grape sauce. I think that's correctable. She clearly knows how to cook. She's not someone who's going to screw up the protein. And the Gruyere was sort of a wonderful they did real problem solving there, right? In that quick fire. Just to remind everybody, you know, she gets paired up with Gabriel, who's got caul fat, which is essentially kind of the rich person's lard, and Mexican chocolate. So a really strange combo there, right? And they turn it into this Gruyere Gremolata, and though it sounds a little weird, what essentially is sort of a mutant pesto, right? Like, what's pesto? It's this sort of herbs with, you know, pecorino or Parmesan. And so they just did this sort of the herbs with Gruyere. So it's not as insane as we thought. But I also thought, I think she's going to hang around. Like, this is almost an insulting slot for her. And I think I might get a bit of a steal here.
Yeah, you did. And Kevin, we'll talk about credentialists here again, not just about the Beard Award winners, but also there are no sous chefs here. What did you think of that when Padma announced that there are no sous chefs this season of Top Chef?
Yeah, you know, I don't know what to make of that. I mean, you would be better with the numbers. How do sous chefs have a good history in this show?
Great question. I don't know the answer to that, but I thought it was interesting that we got all 15 chefs are leading the kitchen in their back home at their restaurant. And I think, you know, we'll talk about Sarah again here. There's a little bit of Stephanie Simar here, where Stephanie, I kind of feel like was a sous chef who was just an amazing, amazing competitor last year, just barreling through the competition every step of the way. I just didn't feel like she deserved to be there, or was surprised that she got as far as she did. So it's not as simple as, like, you know what, if you're an up and coming chef, you don't have a shot at winning this whole thing. Like, I just thought it was, I didn't really, when we were doing the bios, I didn't think, oh, we don't have any sous chefs here. So that was an interesting point by Padma that makes this season unique as well. So you got Maria at 9, Brittany at number 10. Who are you picking for the 11th pick in the PYK 4.0 draft?
With the 11th pick, I choose Toni Collette or Sasha Grumman, who looks identical to Toni Collette, one of my favorite actresses. So I'm going to take Sasha here. Did not acquit herself well. Screwing up Polenta should be a red flag, and it did drop me. It did drop her on my board. It just seems like this is sort of a staple starch. Any chef worth their salt should be able to kind of just nail it. There weren't a lot of other components here. And so I'm a little apprehensive about her prospects, but she also seems to have a degree of competence. You know, I think that, you know, hopefully this is sort of just a weird blip on her record, but yeah, let's give it a shot. I mean, we're now down, you know, sort of the bottom four, and this is who I've got at 11.
Okay, number 12, Jamie. Jamie is kind of like, what's his name? The Larvell Jones from Police Academy, who just makes noises, and he's the man of 10,000 sound effects.
Yes.
That's who Jamie is. She doesn't speak in sentences or words. She uses sounds, and I think this is adorable, but also I know magical elves and the judges panel are going to be completely objective and naming, you know, based on the merits of their dish. But sometimes I just kind of feel like they might keep her around because she is super entertaining. This is not to say she can't cook, but man, I can't remember a contestant that was this interesting. Just the fact that she just she communicates in sounds is fantastic.
Yes. It's R2-D2 in the kitchen. And, yeah, she's an interesting contestant because I really thought, I mean, everything I've read about her restaurant in Vegas, I mean, sounds like she should be a really strong contestant. That did not look like a great plate of food. That looked like random ass components.
Yeah.
Surrounding turkey, which again, I mean, who knows? If she draws duck, we might be having an entirely different conversation. You sort of need to mask turkey with other stuff, but it was too much on the plate. No rhyme or reason for the composition. Yeah, kind of forgettable there.
Yeah, Jamie Tran is going to be my number 12 pick. And the last pick that I have on my team. So far I've got both Gabriels, both Gabes. I got Don, Nelson, Kiki, Jamie. And my final pick is going to be Byron Gomez. Byron here didn't have a strong showing here, but I'm a little afraid of Avishar going with an Indian dish that did not play well at all. I just think there's an intimidation factor with Padma. He didn't nail it. And the fact that, you know, he couldn't cook rice really scared me away from Avishar. I'm going with Byron Gomez, who, like, he's a chef to the stars in the Hamptons and in Aspen. I really like Byron. I didn't like his dish here with the Thai style claws. It wasn't really, really strong with the Thai flavors. But at the end of the day, I just was a little afraid of Avishar here with the plate that he gave at the judges' table.
Yeah, I've got some consolation with Avishar. He is now my final pick, and this is the last player on the board here. He did nail his protein, and I feel like in Top Chef, can you nail your protein? Keeps you out of the bottom for a few weeks. It really does. I am as concerned as you are. I mean, and again, look, who am I? These people are all brilliant, and I'm a home cook, but damn, Tom. Like,
you can't cook the
rice. You know
how
hard it is to screw up rice? I like to put a little chicken stock instead of water. You put a little duck fat I put in there sometimes just to kind of moisten it up, make it a little rich. Like, it's really hard to turn out awful rice, and yet he turned out awful rice. And so that does concern me. On the other hand, you could argue, look, he ain't going to make that mistake again. That is sort of the ultimate aberration. I don't believe for a second this is a chef who cannot cook rice. And so I am a bit reassured that he knows how to fry some strange bird that no one's ever heard of, because that's much harder. So he did the difficult thing well. And maybe he does hang around. Again, if you can master your proteins, you can generally stay out of the basement for a while. Tom, we have kind of a eulogy to deliver here. A very sad development in the first episode.
Let me ask you a question here. Can I draft Roscoe?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Because we have like...
We have seven contestants each, but he's going to Last Chance Kitchen. you know, the debate is, is he just a negative on the board because he's already in Last Chance Kitchen? My question to you, Kevin, is would you grant me the waiver wire pickup of Roscoe?
All right, but you have to, as long as you eat the negative points from this week, you don't just get free points, my friend.
We were all whatever happened in episode one is already in the past.
My point is why do I give you an extra player who's going to generate points? There's no, what's the upside to me by giving you?
Well, the upside, Kevin, is you didn't even think he was available. So you obviously didn't.
Well, that's because I just didn't know. But I mean, like, the reason I'm available is precisely this reason. There, one of us will have eight and the other will have seven. What, Tom, let me ask you a question. What does the average contestant earn in points in a season?
Well, the thing is in Last Chance Kitchen, there's no upside in Last Chance Kitchen. It's not like you get a five points for a win there. The upside is that he gets 1 point for every victory. Whereas if you're still in the competition, you have the upside in the next round, you can get 10 points for winning the elimination, right? So, you know, in years past, we had Chef Carey as the 16th out of 18 picks. Chef Carey had 78 points, and she went just about to the end of the competition. She wasn't coming out of Last Chance Kitchen, but I'm just saying that, you know, sometimes there's value here on the
There's value, but, like, why should you get the value?
Because you just threw it away. You tossed it into the trash, I want that 15th pick.
Anyway, I do want to no, you don't get him without, like, some sort of price. Like, you don't just get a free, like, what if he runs the table? Like, what if he runs three tables and then you get 3 points? Disappointed.
I will trade you, if you're so upset about this, I will trade you Avishar for Roscoe. You can have Roscoe and I'll have Avishar.
So this is what Tom is thinking. Tom is thinking that Avishar is going to eat a big ass -5 pretty soon. And that I'll get sort of stuck with that. So you want Avishar. Oh, right. You want Avishar for Roscoe.
Yeah, I think Avishar could be the next Brian Mullarky.
Roscoe's off the board. They do this weird thing now at Top Chef, which is they have 15, which is a very odd. So we need to bring in Mina or somebody to be like the third player in our game. Or we just have to live with the idea that there's an unclaimed contestant out there. Because I do think the 7-7 is like, you don't get to play kickball, one team with 9 and one team with 8. I mean, back in the day you did, because, like, who cared? There was always the kid playing in the sand and, you know, anyone can have him. And Roscoe's not playing in the sand. I'm very sad, Tom. Here's my question about Roscoe. You're a great pit master. You're working with duck. You know what's really good, Tom? Smoked duck.
Yeah.
Why aren't you giving that duck the Rodney Scott treatment? And he knows it. And he knew it right off the bat. He did something that wasn't him. It didn't play out. But I'm just, for a guy who works so beautifully with a protein that is beautifully smoked, it just seemed like a lost opportunity.
Yeah, it's never good when the judges said it's a sad plate. It just looks sad. The broth was no good. The cooking was no good. It was full of grease. I believe someone described it as a bowl full of fear, which is just amazing. A bowl full of fear. Oh, my God. It was not... He didn't bring his best there, and I think he can survive in Last Chance Kitchen, but it just seemed like he was a little out of his element there, not really giving. You know, some people are so confident in themselves and what they bring to the table. I almost feel like the artist in him decided to get a little too creative when he should have just stuck to smoked duck, like you said. So. Yeah, it was a sad looking plate, very sad looking. And he finishes, you know, he gets eliminated, bottom four. I don't think it was a bit of a surprise that it was Roscoe.
Yeah. Do you like your team, Tom? Do you like your team? Do you like Gabe, Gabriel, Dawn, Kiki, Nelson, Byron, and Jamie? Are you feeling confident headed into the season?
I do. I wanted both Gabes on my team. I really thought Dawn has special potential here, and Shota. I know Shota is a juggernaut, it looks like, but as we've seen the last few years, like, whoever does really well showing out in the first episode, not necessarily a predictor of future success, but he was number one on my board, and I might be really upset here. You at the top, you get the elimination challenge winner and the odds-on favorite.
Right, I mean, who I also determined was the runner-up in that thing. I mean, that was sort of my theory. Is I've always I, I've I have outsmarted myself in past seasons being a credentialist. Oh, this person has this award, or I know the fancy restaurant they cook at, or ooh, look at that bio. And this season, I'm just saying I wanted two of the best three. I think they were like overwhelmingly three top performers this week. It was Shota, Gabe, and Sarah. I wanted two of them. I wanted to ensure I got two of them. Though actually, if I ensured I got two of them, I should have just kept two and three. But I really wanted Shota in one of those other two.
Yeah, I was going to take Shota.
But I wanted Shota in either Gabe or Sarah. Was just, by the way, really floored. I think your boldest pick was Dawn at three. Not because I don't think she's great, but like, you know, Sarah there, you're a probabilities guy, and you basically handed me. Well, then you handed me the episode one winner.
Here is the last four seasons finish of the Elimination Challenge. Okay. Last year, Gregory finished fifth by technicality, got injured, right?
Yep.
Natalie, season 16, finished 15th. Tyler won the first challenge, finished 13th. Casey in season 14 finished sixth. So in the last 4 years, the average finish of the first Elimination Challenge winner was 9.8. So, Kevin, I'm wrestling between the two things, the recency bias or just the entire 17 seasons of Top Chef. Which one am I weighing more heavily? What's happened more recently or what happened, you know, in previous decades where the internet didn't exist? You know, like, I don't know. I don't know. So, Sarah, maybe if I didn't do that math and looking at the recent history of the first Elimination Challenge winners, I would have taken Sarah there at number three. But I did get a little scared by the fact that the first episode recently has not been a great predictor of long-term success as much as we did in the first 13 seasons.
What are you looking forward to most?
I really enjoyed seeing Dale Talday and Kwame and Richard Blaze at the table. I miss those folks. And it's not necessarily an all-star season where they're cooking, but I do think that this is really fun to see those familiar faces. I'm really enjoying that factor this year.
You know, I love the fact that with each passing season, there's now sort of these recognizable characters of the show. Blaze is sort of a classic. Kwame's becoming a staple. I believe Melissa will be around for many more years. So that's very cool. And hey, it's Gail Simmons. It's Gail Simmons. I'm very excited. For Tom Habbitt Show, this is Kevin Arnovitz, and this is Pack Your Knives.